Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Bughead Podcast. Today we got digital hardcore savant, 32-bit horror. How do you want to be referred to? Do you want the...
Cleo's fine.
Cleo? Cleo of 32-bit horror. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, thank you.
We met briefly at a show at Transpicos. Was that, last year. And that's how I found out about your music. You had Zach come on for the one song you guys did together, right?
That was for Spit Like This. Me and Zach had met a long while ago at Zach's first set, and we were kicking around the idea of doing a song for so long, and we still want to collaborate because that song, Spit Like This, was just such a lightning in the bottle moment. And I had to be like, when I went to New York, I came with the express purpose of being like, let's like have everybody that's featured on the record that is there like play that set and, you know, be as true to it as possible, you know, just have fun with it.
How'd you link up with Zach for that song? I do want to talk about that just because friend of the show. Zach was the first interview we ever did on this podcast.
I love Zach so much. Zach's music is awesome. I initially met Zach in November of 2020 or November or October of 2023 when I was still working on 32-bit horror like before it was even like a real thing. I went to New York City. I got the offer to play bass for a couple shows with them all around New York and, you know, New York City and upstate New York. One of the shows we were playing was going to be in a train tunnel. The cops ended up showing up to break up the train tunnel set. We didn't get to play that. This was, you know, there was like two shows, I think, that night, one in the 6 to 9 p.m. and another one from 9 p.m. to later. And we were supposed to play 9 p.m. later, but NYPD came, busted it. I had to haul like 50 pounds worth of gear, military style, outside of a train tunnel back to in the freezing New York cold out to the patio of a local venue, Purgatory, and then we played the set there, which they were so gracious to let us do. And that's where I met Zach, because Zach was playing that night also and opened up for KFC. That was an awesome set. That I have such good memories of that. I regularly like look at the pictures and I'm like, this is just so electric.
So you were playing those shows before is this before your album came out or your EP? Because you have let me see, I got your Spotify open right here. Yeah, you got the KPMO EP and then the Trust Me One Day This Will All Make Sense album. Did this come out before both of those, that meetup?
Yeah, that happened much before, and I was in the process of working on what would become the album at that point. Like the real bulk of it happened, the real bulk of the work on the album happened a little bit after that, because I was like, okay, I kind of have this general idea of what my sound is going forward. Some of those songs ended up going on KPMO, some of them ended up on the record. But by the time I had gone to New York, it was like just like an idea in my head, like what I wanted to do for the project.
All right, I want to get a bit of a timeline here. What's like the origin story behind 32-bit horror? How did this project originally come to form?
I was really mad and going through a lot. I'm you know, of course, a trans woman, and I initially came up with the project while I was in the early stages of transitioning, and a lot of that pent up anger and frustration and, you know, self-hatred was like boiling up in my body. And I had, you know, I wasn't going to quit music, you know, for a long time. I don't ever plan on quitting music, but there was a point where I was like so fed up with everything that I was considering it and just like, you know, receding into the background. But I decided that I was going to at least try to make one last release and then, you know, maybe recede. And I ended up putting out, I worked on a project called Point Click Kill with my friend MPT Cultist, who is featured on the 32-bit horror record. I got the call to play with KFC Murder Chicks, and a bunch of other opportunities fell into my lap after I started working on the singles that would form the basis of, you know, KPMO and the 32-bit horror record. So it gave me like a new renewed sense of self-worth after that all happened. And I've just been writing it ever since.
Who are some of the artists that you were listening to and pulling from when you first started working on the 32-bit horror songs?
I'm going to be completely real with you here. I came up with the 32-bit horror project as like an homage to the Shizit, which is, I'm pretty sure a bunch of people who know a decent amount about digital hardcore will know about the Shizit. It's the guy from Rabbit Junk, his first band, just had this insane record called Soundtrack for the Revolution, and they only ever released that one record. And I heard that record, and I was like, this is everything I ever wanted from a digital hardcore record. So I set out to make my own. And of course, I couldn't make like a carbon copy, like even if I tried. It would have felt wrong to try and do that. So I added in like other stuff I was listening to at the time. Like I was listening to a lot of like CU Space Cowboy and Sascore stuff. I was really into like I was coming out of the tail end of like an atmospheric breakcore kick that I'm pretty sure everyone that's into electronic music has had around that time period. And you know, just a lot of nu metal, which, you know, I got a lot of support from the Nu Metal Agenda and Holiday Kirk based off that, because I stood, you know, I was really into, I was following that account, and I was getting introduced to a bunch of new to me, nu metal that I ended up going into the project. So, but really the core of it was just, let's just make the most I just wanted to make the most bombastic, like guitar centric, heavy, digital, like industrial metal, punk, hybrid, whatever you want to call it, that I could. I always would refer to it as like, to people who didn't know anything about digital hardcore, is like the Prodigy on steroids, was kind of the elevator pitch, I guess, to make a long story short.
That's a pretty good description. I think that works.
I mean, the album ended up going in a lot of different places though, like compared to the initial Prodigy on steroids pitch. It's a weird record, honestly.
But you were telling me that it's a concept album?
It was a concept album that never really got to see the light of day, because I had plans to do like a whole other companion art pieces for it. You know, there was supposed to be all this planning that never really made it to fruition because I just didn't have the means at the time. But it's a concept record about a near future, like kind of cyberpunky, war, Eastern European conflict. It's kind of like an All Quiet on the Western Front type of situation, where they start out like super, you know, just these disaffected kids who want to, you know, change stuff, and you know, they get sucked into the military industrial complex and come out the other side just completely destroyed. And that was the concept, but it never really like came to fruition because I just didn't have the means. I was going to do a comic book. That was the big thing, but I didn't have the patience for it.
What made you want to pick those themes?
So I was, when I was in college, before I dropped out a little bit, before I started doing 32-bit horror, I was studying Russian history. Actually, I was a history major, and my focus was going to be on Russian history. And around that same time, the war in Ukraine happened, and I was like, this is insane. I'd never like seen like a very like cyberpunk-esque, very like near future, this like the convergence of like all these new technologies coming together with like a very grimy, dirty war just made me want to like shocked me. And I was like, I wanted to explore like those sort of themes on the record. And I think I did a pretty good job of like keeping it from being like exploitative, but at the same time, like the fact that I even had like those reservations has kind of changed my outlook on the record in a lot of ways.
Do you want to go through some of the like more specific steps of the story? Are there any specific events that these characters are going through that you can point to in a song?
Yeah, so I specifically the real story beats, I forget the track list off the top of my head, so let me just pull that up real quick. I'm on RYM right now, and I'm just going to pull it up on RYM.
Fellow RYM head.
I love RYM. I can't deny it. I was like, I started using RYM like a couple, like about 6 months ago or something, and I just... The worst part is that my own record is on there, so I like religiously like check the ratings on it, and I'm like, is it has it gone up? Has it gone down? And I'm like, shit, it's gone.
So remember
down.
You reached out to me saying you wanted to like work on some promo stuff, and you saw that I had reviewed the album on
your music. Because I was hoping that you would listen to the record because I saw the stuff that you did with Zach, and I was like, that's fucking cool as shit. And I wanted to be like on the podcast from that. So when you saw it, I was like, I got my in now. but specifically, I think it's really put the records really put into like three acts. Like, you brought a kid to a gunfight up until like, Show Me Love is like the first act. The third act is like Oh Shit going to or the sixth track, Oh Shit, going to track number 9 at the Frontline Infirmary. And then the third act is track 10 going to track 14, you know, Fire Starters to Needle Sharing.
Wait, so and it's like track 6 to track 10 is act 2?
Yeah, track 6 to about track 9 or 10 is about is act 2. What I would call act 2.
You called it act 3 and, a second ago. I just wanted to make sure.
Oh. My bad. Track 10 to track 14 is
act 3.
Is act 3, yeah. But that it's like in the first act all the characters are like, you know, let's fight in this war. This is like, you know, this is, you know, our coming of age. This is, we can do something. We can change our lives. We can like, you know, the real interesting, the thing I wanted to say was specifically with Nevada Tan was like a lot of kids nowadays, like, you know, are predisposed to violence, you know, just by, you know, the stuff that we see on the internet all the time. And, you know, you can find a picture of a guy getting blown up by a tank within like 2 minutes of searching. And it's not even on like the dark web. It's on like fucking Reddit or TikTok. So, and you know, I'm not necessarily condemning the fact that these things are so readily accessible in a sort of puritanical way. It's more of just saying like, hey, there are kids that are really fucked up that are seeing these things. They're fucked in the head and they have like they start to think that these violent urges are worthy of being entertained instead of like going, you know, the going with their conscience and realizing that these things are not normal behavior. And Nevada Tan is like a song about that. It's Nevada Tan is a song, honestly, I was scared to even put on the record because of how provocative it was. I mean, it's all in the name and the lyrics. It's a violent song. It's a very angry song. And I was scared to put it on there because of how upfront it was. But at the same time, it was kind of the perfect vertical slice of the record. You know what I'm saying? Like, Like, it kind of has everything that the record is about all in one package. One very, very gruesome package. And I remember when I wrote the chorus, the Nevada Tan, yeah, show me what you got right in your hand, Nevada Tan. I remember writing that and going like, fuck, this is like genius. And then thinking for like 5 seconds, like, fuck, this is like, this is horrible. This is awful. You know, like this is, you know, this is like gross. And then I thought about it for a second. I was like, this gross feeling that I have, let's like explore that in the concept, in the framework of a record, like that dissonance.
I think on today's re-listen, I was starting to like understand the themes of the album a lot more. I had no idea what Nevada Tan was until Googling it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It was I don't remember specifically what was the impetus, but I remember writing the chorus for that song worse. That song actually took like 5 years to make. Have I ever told you that?
No.
I think I started writing it in like 2019, like pre-COVID, when I wrote that chorus. And it was a song for an old band that I used to play with. And I ended up taking that, reshaping it like several times over the course of, like, you know, from that point onward, and it became that song. But the only thing that's the same is the chorus is the same. And I was thinking about how the media like glorifies like school shooters and stuff like that, and how so much emphasis is placed on like the people that commit these horrible acts instead of the people who are affected by these horrible acts. And I was thinking about that sort of exploitation, and I was like, there's like one part where the song goes, they'll only listen when you're spraying out your 5 liters, is like a line about that. Like, the media will only give a shit if there's like blood happening and if there's like gore, even though they want to like be like, oh, this is whole, like point the finger and try to say something about it. They really don't say anything because, you know, nobody will listen. The viewership is in the gore and the blood. And it's just a criticism of media culture, really. But I remember when I dropped that song, the expressions, you know, some people heard it and they were like, this is fucking complete trash. Fuck you for releasing this. But you know, the majority of the response was really good. I remember when it went live on the New Metal Agenda, some people were like, you know, some people got weirdly transphobic about it. You know, they were like, these people like to make music like this. That's just noise. And it was weird. It was a really weird time, you know.
What's the album art? The album has like really striking cover art.
If you take the record and you tilt it on its corner, this is actually a reference to a song on the album. The song Beslan was just the beginning. That's a picture from the Beslan siege, which was basically like roughly equivalent to Russia's 9/11. Like the Russian Federation. I thought it was a really striking image of just this guy walking around in this like exploded building. This kind of embodies like that feeling of emptiness that the record, I think, has. That's the thing. That's, you know, one of the things about the record is that it's just like this filled with so much dense like historical references to like Russian history, because I was studying that at the time. So there's like little bits all over the record of like, oh, this is about that, this is about that, so on and so forth.
We talked about the collaboration with Zach on Spit Like This. Do you want to talk about the other features on the album?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to first mention Gary Brentz of he does Gone Mage, Carnier, Memorage also as well. Other amazing projects. He lives, you know, I live in Dallas. He lives in Arlington, so we live in the same sort of metroplex. But he did the mixing and mastering and did a freaking phenomenal job, better than I would have been able to do for my own record. And his fingerprints are all over it. He made it sound great. He kept a lot of the dynamic range in there, which was really good. And I really appreciate his input on the record. He wasn't necessarily a producer role, but his touch really brought the thing like the album to life, I think, instead of just being like a big brick walled mess. Faraday Ribcage is on Gravel Pit, and I've known Eve I think about the same amount of time that I've known the KFC crew, maybe a little bit shorter, but I loved the stuff that she was doing, and I still love the stuff that she's doing. But at the time I was like, I want to get her on the record to do some stuff on Gravel Pit, because I feel like that song fit her voice. And of course the legendary Emily White Corset on Death Regiment. Emily's been my friend just as long as the KFC crew, and we've actually played together. We played, she did drums for my other band, Script Kitty, on tour, on the Botched tour that we were doing just a couple months ago. And of course, I already mentioned Catherine, who did all of the programming on the song NATO, which honestly is probably the best song in the album.
You seem to have performed and collaborated with the KFC Murder Chicks crew a good couple of times. How'd you get linked up with them?
I can neither confirm nor deny my involvement with the KFC merge. No, I'm not going to be like that. I remember when this was like while I was still in Point Click Kill, and I was visiting Catherine, MPT Cultist, in Florida, and she was like, spontaneously I like woke up one day and she was like, hey, do you want to go see KFC Murder Chicks in Atlanta? Do you want to drive all the way from Orlando to fucking like see the show in Atlanta? And I was like, fuck it, I ain't got nothing better to do, you know, just hanging out, why not go to Atlanta? I've never been to Atlanta. And I was thinking to myself, I wasn't familiar really that much with KFC Murder Chicks, but we were driving to, you know, Atlanta, and she put on the songs, and I started looking up the band. I was like, oh, these are the 223 Erotus guys, as everyone, you know, always mentions when they mention KFC Murder Chicks. It's like 223 Erotus. And I was like, oh, it's these guys. Dang, they make some pretty good fucking beats. You know, I was like, this is awesome. I'm excited to see them. And their rental car, the day we were supposed to see them, their rental car broke down in North Carolina. So we were like messaging them and like, hey, are you guys all right? We're fans of you guys, and we're wondering if you're going to make it. And they're like, nah, we're not going to make it. Our rental car broke down, and we were fully prepared to drive all the way to North Carolina in the middle of the night to go grab them. But they were like, no, it's cool. And then they came down the next day, and we had breakfast burritos together and just shot the shit with James, Kay, and Ash, who was in the band at the time. And we became pretty fast friends after that. I mentioned I played bass, and they were exploring the idea of doing a live band. And the rest is, you know, the rest is history. We're coolin', we're chillin', we're homies.
DJ Roswell was the first artist with like any significant following that showed Bughead support. So we're We're forever thankful. And
I, meeting James and hearing his perspective on music and everything seriously enlightened me. So I want to express my love to him as well. I think he's a fantastic human being. I think he, his outlook on music is, and his philosophies, I don't know if you've ever had like a one-on-one conversation with him, but he is one of the smartest, most entertaining people I've ever met. Seriously, I'm not even joking.
We did like, we did a episode with them. They were episode like 4 or 5. They were not, maybe not that early.
Okay,
let me see.
Maybe I
but yeah, I don't know if I remember. KFC Murder Chicks are longtime friends of the Bughead Empire.
That's awesome. It's a like one big happy family. A
little bit, yeah. I mean, it's like I feel like the longer I do this, the more I realize how small the underground music scene, like countrywide, is.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's funny. You can draw. Do you know the band Narrowhead at all?
Not really. I've heard the name.
Not really. Okay. There's a lot of like, you know about like the Texas gaze thing happening, like the sort of grunge gaze scene.
Yeah.
So Narrowhead was like one of the first of those bands, and they're opening for like Senses Fail right now. The emo band, and they've played like Sick New World and all these big things, and they're friends with a band called Bleed, which is down in Dallas. Homies of mine, and they're pretty big now, and from like playing at Sick New World, you can draw a straight line all the way to KFC Murder Chicks, and I'm pretty sure like there's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's like 6 degrees of anybody in the music industry.
I feel like you can really like even consolidate it down even further. It's like,
yeah, even further you can consolidate things down, just like interactions we don't know, you know.
We just did speaking of Texas, we just did an interview with the band Party Hats, if you're familiar with them at all. Is there a Texas connection there?
I've never met them, but I know the band, and I think I saw them live at some point way back like 4 years ago or something. I've never really gotten into that scene that much, but hey, I mean, they're probably dope. I don't know either way.
You're good.
Yeah, I'm always way more online than the local scene type thing.
That's like kind of how I started out, was very online. Like, this all started out of kind of the people I knew from the A2B2 scene.
Yeah.
Because I knew Zach, and then I knew...
I kind of was in that. I was kind of tangentially... I wasn't... I remember when all the A2B2 stuff was going on. Like, I was... I knew a lot of people who were in it, but I wasn't necessarily in it myself.
I was a bit more on, like, the magazine side. I have visual art in 2 and 3.
Okay.
And then I was like in the server quite a bit, but like my introduction into the music scene was initially A2B2, and then like a couple like people I knew through skateboarding. I was kind of a late joiner of my local live music scene.
I definitely feel that too. I was definitely a late joiner as well. And even now, I still don't really like going to shows, to be honest. It's kind of a little bit overstimulating, and there's like a lot of times in local scenes, I feel like there's a sort of pressure to, you know, be at every show, which, you know, I just can't afford to do, literally, physically. I work all the time.
So
the internet is a good replacement.
I feel like I had that like, oh, I need to be at every show. Oh, I need to be out as often as possible. Mm-hmm. Especially towards the beginning of Bughead, but it gets tiring. I get it.
Yeah. it's hard to keep up appearances consistently. So I kind of pride myself on not knowing anything about like anything that's happening, really. I'm always like, I don't, somebody will be like, oh, do you know, have you ever listened? I've never listened to Black Dresses. That's one thing.
I don't know what Black Dresses is. Is that a Texas
It's like
band?
Ada Rook and Debbie McAllister, or Debbie McAlliston. I don't remember her last name. They're like a very, very popular like digital hardcore group, sort of electro-industrial type stuff.
Oh, huh. Okay. I've listened a lot to of Peaceful as Hell. That's the only album cover I'm recognizing here.
A lot of people told me that some of the parts on some of the 32-bit horror records sounded like that. And I was like, people keep mentioning this band, and I keep seeing the CD covers everywhere. And I thought to myself, like, if I just never listened to this band, like, that's an instant conversation starter. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I am continually ignorant, because they, like, a lot of bands, I feel like, in the underground get hyped up so much that when you eventually do listen to them, it's a little bit underwhelming, and I don't want to experience that, because I don't want to look at somebody in the face and be like, hey, that band that you really liked, that you thought it was a really huge compliment to compare me to, I actually don't like them, and I think you're dumb too. Like, I don't want to be that type of person.
Have you ever?
I don't want to be.
Oh no, you can finish. Like, sorry. Yeah.
No, that was the end of the statement. No. Really.
Have you ever had like a release, like an anticipated release of yours? Like, you watch a review of it before it comes out, and then you listen. Like, despite the review being really good, something about the album being hyped up before you listen to it ruins it for you.
Oh yeah, everything I see on RYM and Mew, or when I was on Mew,
I had to like
every single one of those records. I just like, I don't really get it.
If it's like something that's a classic and I see that people are calling it a classic, I can listen to it and form my own opinion pretty separate from the rest of it. But if it's like an upcoming release that I'm already like from an artist I follow, and then I see tons of good reviews for it, for some reason, sometimes that just like makes the listening experience underwhelming.
Yeah, it's very rare that I will believe the hype, because the hype tends to ruin my experience. It tends to paint my experience of the album. I remember the best example I think I can give of this is actually what I would consider a pretty good record, but like not for me. The Frost Children released two records, one after the other, and I remember really, really fucking loving to hell and back. I loved Speedrun. I still think that's a fantastic record. When Hearthroom came out, I was super excited about it, but I heard the singles and I was like, what is this? And I listened to the record and I was like, oh, this is just this. Everyone's lauding it with praise, but this is just not for me. Like, this is not my type of, this is not what I came to Frost Children for. I mean, good for them for being multifaceted, but it's like, just, you know, it's somebody else is going to enjoy this more than I will.
I had almost the same experience with the last Death Grips album, Year of the Snitch. Like,
I've never been into Death Grips.
Never been into Death Grips. That's
I've
surprising.
Never been into Death Grips. Yeah, that's one thing that shocks people. Like, I remember Kay from KFC Murder Chicks was telling me, you don't really like Death Grips? And I was like, no, I've never got it. I just never got it. I've liked some of the, whenever I hear a Death Grips song, I'm like, this is really cool. And then like, I never feel the need to listen to that song again. I guess it's the feeling. You like Dialect?
Dialect?
dialect. They're they were like a 2003 or 2000s industrial hip hop band. If you like Death Grips and stuff, that's more of the industrial hip hop that I was into. Really beady, almost kind of like boom bap sort of drums with like these noise textures on top, and then like a guy just like spilling his almost slam poetry.
How do I spell that?
It's Dalek, like Doctor Who Dalek.
Oh, I know Dalek. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dialect. I think that's the way you say it.
Okay, I do know. I do know. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I do.
They're badass.
I like the album from Filthy Tongues of Gods and Griots.
That's the one I was gonna recommend. That's an insane record.
That's a really good album. Yeah. I just call them Dalek. That's why I was confused there.
I always said I think I try not to say Dalek, because then like everybody thinks I'm talking about fucking Doctor Who, and I will, if believe me, I'll talk about Doctor Who, but I don't want to talk about Doctor Who right now. It's like I'm not in that mode. They're another one of those bands that like I respect them, and I think they've done like a lot of good for digital hardcore and stuff like that, but I've never been a person that's like, this is my fucking band. Was Machine Girl. I've never been on like, been like, this is the fucking most groundbreaking shit ever. It's just not my thing.
Machine Girl's a weird one for me, because there's like specific tracks that I absolutely adore.
Yeah.
But most of their discography just like doesn't do anything for me. I think my favorite release of theirs is like their like C-punk EP, Repurposed Fantasies.
Mm.
I like that.
I think
kind of more than their digital hardcore stuff.
I think that because I'm young, arrogant, and hate everything you stand for, I think that's a great record.
That is a good album.
It's a fantastic record.
That's a good album.
But I remember listening to it once, about like, I don't know, 8 months ago, and then like 3 months later I listened to it and I'm like, this is cool, but it just didn't click with me in the way that like some other digital hardcore stuff did. It just doesn't, to me, like when I go to digital hardcore, I go for like roughness. I go for lo-fi. And I feel like that record's very high fidelity. Like there's a lot going on.
Have you seen Machine Girl live?
Yes, I have. Their live show is 10 times better than
their is incredible. That like it really is what I want out of it, like a digital hardcore show. They do a fantastic job live.
I saw them open for 100 Gex and they fucking stole the show.
I saw them open for 100 Gex in Boston. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw them open in Dallas, and oh my god. I work at a music venue as like my main job, and I've never seen like an opening act be like that much doper than the headliner.
I've seen them,
to be frank.
I've seen them twice. The first time I think was my favorite was where was that? Crystal Ballroom in Somerville, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. Who else played that? Lil Kevo 303, friend of the show, was the first opener.
Badass. Yeah. And, shout out Lil Kevo.
And then Lussick Puppy.
Shout out Lussick Puppy. Lussick Puppy is dope.
And then that was a good show, yeah.
Lussick Puppy is one of the digital hardcore artists that I feel like I do believe the hype for. Like incredible record, incredible live show. Powerful. Just strength. I like my digital hardcore to have like just this unspoken punk rock strength to it. And whether it's just like pure balls to the wall aggression, like with Atari Teenage Riot, or just, you know, to just smack you across. I want my digital hardcore to smack me across the face, I guess is what I'm saying. And Lussick Puppy absolutely does that. It's just great. Great. I can't say that enough. But yeah, I feel like with digital hardcore, there's like two different like waves of it. in my mind. There's like the 2000s sort of wave, or the 90s 2000 stuff that's like came from digital hardcore recordings, you know, Atari Teenage Riot and stuff, and then like a new one that came after Death Grips came out. And I think a lot of the stuff that comes out nowadays that's called digital hardcore is downstream from the Death Grip stuff. While I think that what I'm doing is more downstream from the Atari Teenage Riot strain of digital hardcore.
I totally see that. You do the aggressive Atari Teenage Riot drums with that, like, I think your guitar playing style is definitely nu metal through and through, though. It's,
oh yeah.
You're definitely, you said you were getting like posted to some nu metal site. What was that called?
We were featured, Crazy Ass Moments in Nu Metal History. The Twitter account has posted 32-bit horror several times.
Hell yeah.
I remember when Holiday Kirk was starting out, sort of. Not really starting out, but like getting off the floor. And I was in the Discord server very early. And I still, you know, I talk to Kirk occasionally. And he's awesome, and he's been a supporter since day one for 32-bit horror, I guess. And yeah, there's a lot of nu metal riffage on the 32-bit horror record, but honestly, I feel like when I go back to that project, there's going to be a little bit less nu metal, or maybe it's going to be a little bit harsher. I don't know.
What are you trying to replace it with? Some more, heavy hardcore breakdowns in there?
Actually, probably a few of those, a few slam death metal chugs here and there. I've been getting really into various, you know, like I've been getting really into like black metal and stuff.
Okay.
And I think I think black metal with Gabber is part of the sound that I've been drawing on for that record.
Let's fucking
it's like that
go.
Concept. Yeah, I mean,
what kind of black metal are you listening to recently?
My voice gets all shaky. A lot of the
Norwegian
stuff.
I'll bleep out any racist ones. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the not any racist. I try to avoid that, but the thing is with Norwegian black metal is it's, you know, you kind of get what you're gonna get. All of those bands were fucking shitty in some way, shape, or form. One specifically that I think that I will mention by name is Thorns. I really fucking love Thorns. Only got one record. It was the guy, and it's not clean either. Depends on how you want to look at this, but he was the guy who drove Varg to Euronymous's place when they had that confrontation. And then he got arrested as an accomplice, went to jail, came out of jail and released a Thorns record, which was like that Norwegian style of black metal combined with like industrial.
Okay, I'll check that out.
It's a cool ass record, you know. Depends on how bad of course his relation to the whole Norwegian black metal thing leaves a bad taste in your mouth, how much that does. Also, Liturgy. I really love Liturgy. I've always really liked Liturgy. I really like a lot of war metal. I gotta remember specifically what I was listening to. I get recommendations from my friends all the time that are way more into black metal than I am. And I don't want to like look like a poser, because I am a poser and I'm very early on into getting into metal. Fuck, what was that record? Blasphemy. I really like Blasphemy. I really like Primitive Warfare, Extinction Protocol. It's kind of like almost got a death grind thing to it, and I love me some death grind. So you'll probably hear some of those types of riffs on the next 32-bit horror record, which there will be one.
We were talking about this. You have a new release in the planning phases right now, right?
Yeah, we're in the planning phases. I have this record's going to be a sequel concept record to the original concept. I'll hopefully get more time to elaborate on it. It's going to be shorter. It's going to be a shorter record for sure. We're going to drop a single for it early next month or late this month. And I know the name of it. It's going to be called Armalite. It's going to be a rap metal song. It's going to be closer to what the old style was, closer to a Spit Like This type song. And I'm super excited about it. I remember I was writing the song and I was just like, it clicked. I was like, I can do another 30 Super Horror record is basically what I was saying. Cause there was a period where I was like, I didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. I remember the project was kind of retired for a little bit and I was disappointed. What was up with that?
I'm not really super, super good at like doing the whole business side of music. And I got a bunch of offers to do stuff and my head was just not in it at the time a couple months ago. So I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. This is like, that record was a very traumatic record to make, is what I will say. And I needed some time to address those traumas and really like work through them, you know, go to therapy, get myself some help, really think, you know, because it was like a bloodletting almost, that record. So I had to take time and focus on myself before I could even think about making any sort of music afterwards. And a lot of that turned into music. A lot of the music that I made that wasn't 32-bit horror was turned into a new project that I'm doing with some friends in Dallas that's like much softer, called Script Kitty. It's not as intense, nowhere near as electronic, but still like there's a lot of singing on it, not as much screaming. And it's a departure, but I hope that people would be interested in that too, whenever that gets finalized.
All right. We're getting pretty deep into the episode now. Towards the end, I like to ask every artist, who are some people you want to shout out? Some things you want to plug or something you want to recommend?
I think everyone should stay on the lookout for everybody that I mentioned in the episode so far. Of course, you know, KFC Murder Shakes, Faraday Ripcage, Memorage, White Corset, Zacharama, Bleed. Should also mention Bleed. And be on the lookout because I'm going to drop a new single for 32-bit horror soon. My band, Script Kitty, is going to drop an EP hopefully at some point down the line. Maybe we can talk about that when that comes around. I like to describe it as like Helmet meets Interpol meets Oasis. And just be aware, you know where to find me. if you want to find me, you know where to find me.
Links in the description.
Links in the description.
All right, thank you. I want to shout out you, the listener, for listening to another episode of the Bughead Podcast. I'd like to thank you, Cleo, for coming on and doing a great episode. This went by so quick.
My pleasure. I talk a lot.
That's perfect. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.